हरिः ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 2 अधिकरण 1 भक्ति इज ऑल ऑस्पिशियस रिमूव्स ऑल सिंस एंड देयर रिएक्शंस। सो वी आर ऑन लेट्स सी What are we on? Anucheta 126. So this is done from quoting from Bhagavatam 6.115. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. Right? Because unless they're on this platform, they might revive, right? Either from karma that you've reduced them because you have a piety, so there's an inclination towards the mode of goodness, so therefore doing everything properly may be there. But depending upon the association situation, then material desire may come up again. Then if one's on the platform of liberation, that one may become liberated from the material entanglement. But the problem is that he's burned up the sinful desires or the sinful reactions that are there in the heart. So he doesn't, we say, no, that's how he's on the liberated platform. He has no karma as such. But because he hasn't removed the desire seeds in the form of the Linga Sharir, then again, when he takes an interest in action, then again, they will sprout from the ashes, as the Acharya said. All right. So only the person who is in pursuance of unalloyed devotional service, and those on that platform can completely uproot them. Right. So in the beginning, it'll be uprooting, but to be complete, then means it has to go all the way to pure unalloyed devotion, right? He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays, right? So it's not by some technique or this or that, just by devotional service, as we saw, is that as bhakti is the Abhideya, the Abhideya, there isn't any other, right? So all karma and jnana is successful in as much as it's being done with the proper devotional, attention and attitude. Though only the pure devotees, or the devotees interested in pure devotional service, their Abhideya of bhakti then gives pure devotional service. While the others' performance of bhakti and karma and jnana, then because they're not actually acknowledging devotional service as the Abhideya, they think it's they're performing karma or they're performing jnana. But that's the point, is that karma can't work without jnana, right? It's like thinking the toaster does toasting on its own without the electricity. So therefore, the electricity will toast the toast, and then when it's over, then bhakti will disappear. So they don't get any devotional credit for having put in that work. They may get the external material benefits, but they don't get the spiritual. So that's the sad part, is they have to work so hard, and it's so difficult for them, because in bhakti it becomes very, very nice, because you're doing it for as a person for a person. While on the and you actually are that person, and Krishna is who he is. While on the material platform, then you're working on the external, and so therefore then all the perfections that have to be done, right? So the devotion has to be there, that endeavor, but everything has to be perfect. right? If there's any imperfection in the performance of karma, then it won't give the desired result, right? So that's to the degree that the perfection is there in the technique, to that degree, then you can get a good result in karma or jnana. And any weakness in the technique then will mean failure. Because that's the point, is that the others, until you get it to 100%, it's not complete. Like if I cook a fabulous meal, you know, all the best ingredients, all the best techniques and the best kitchen and everything's the best, but I only cook it up to 90%, I don't have a meal. I have nothing. So it's not that, oh, it's 90% of them. No, it's nothing. So that's the thing with karma and jnana. Until it's 100%, you don't actually have anything. Or with bhakti, even you do, you know, a few percent, you have that. It's actually real. That's the difference. Bhakti is in its own category because it's independent. While the others are being dependent on bhakti, then they can give a result in as much as they put in the effort to bhakti and they follow the technique of what they're doing. That's why it's so much a problem. While the devotees, they are engaged in these processes. And, you know, the technicality of these different processes, you know, in performing action or using knowledge, it's not about the perfection of what you're doing. It's about the perfection of the devotion. So if the devotion is correct, then Krishna says he'll carry what you lack, right? So you're sincere, and let's say you only perform at 60%, but then, you know, the result, you'll have a good result, right? Well, if the karmis, like we said, if they only get up to 60%, it's only 60%. No one will recognize it. They may say, okay, nice effort, but until you get it done, it doesn't mean anything. So it's actually different because you just have to do bhakti. Karma comes along with it. Well, if you're doing karma, you have to do bhakti and you have to do all the technical points of karma. So bhakti is easily performed and happily performed because, you know, it's being done in a natural relationship and all that. And so everything works very well. But for the karmis, then, you know, and the jnanis, oh, it's very hard work because it's very exacting what they have to do. Any mistakes, you know, so many things are difficult, right? So that's the Adhikarda. I mean, it means the Anucheda. So now in here, and establishing the position of bhakti and all that, then he's been quoting a run of verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Right? And so then we'll continue with that. So this is 1.1.22. It was understood that the low birth of the dog eater is the cause of his disqualification for performing sacrifices. The sinful reaction by which he attains such low birth in this life is called the Prarabdha sin, right? So the point being is that bhakti removes all sins and their reactions. So if someone's born in a dog eater family, why are they born there except by sinful reaction? You have a certain volume of sinful reactions, you take a sinful birth. So if you're born in the family of dog eaters, then that means you have a lot of sin and their reactions. That's the Prarabdha karma, right? But bhakti removes that because this dog eater, by association of the devotees, then takes up the chanting of the holy name and takes up the process of devotional service, you know, and then with that, the heart being cleansed, they come to the, you know, the position where they're stable. And then they are able to perform, you know, the Vedic sacrifices like that. And so that means, you know, through training. And of course, the Acharya makes that point is that just as the Brahmin, he's born into the Brahmin family. That means he has piety. That's why he's born there. But he can't do sacrifice unless he takes initiation and he's trained in, you know, the Vedic mantras and Vedic technique. Then he can perform the sacrifice, not because he's just born in the Brahmin family, he can do it. No, he has to be trained in it. He has to be qualified. So in the same way as the chandala, that he comes in contact with the devotees, he takes up the process, then through training and initiation, then he becomes qualified to perform the same sacrifices. So we can see as the one is born in piety, one is born in sin, but they both end up with the same result. Why? Because bhakti, being all auspicious, removes all sins and their reactions. That's the point. Karma cannot do that. Karma cannot take, a chandala and turn them into a yagyik brahman. Right? Bhakti can do that. You know, same with gyan and all that. You know, someone from a low background and that, and they become very advanced. So you see is that, you know, all, so many effort in our own line, then they, you know, the prostitute at Benapole, who, you know, came to, harass Hare Das Thakur, but, you know, by hearing his chanting became purified, where then she could act on the Uttamadhikari platform and sit there and chant, you know, chant all day like her guru. And all the local people would come and see in that. Same with, we have the same Magrari, the hunter, right? He comes to an elevated platform, you know, what's his name? He's always with Narad Muni, name with a P. Can't remember the name. So he was impressed, you know, the power of Narad Muni's association. And then we have Dasaratnakar, again by Narad Muni's association. Then, you know, he came from Parvat Muni, exactly. Yes. So then Parvat Muni came and he was impressed that, you know, this guy, how can you say this guy's a, you know, a hunter? Dasaratnakar, then he becomes Valmiki Muni and he documents Ramayana. He becomes his ashram becomes the shelter for Sita Devi and Lava and Kush. And like this, he's a greatly renowned sage. And then we see Prahlad Maharaj, you know, born in the demon family, but then by association of Narad Muni, even while he's in the womb, then he, you know, becomes a pure devotee. So we see at 3 years old, he's manifesting those qualities. And then, you know, when he goes to school, then his preaching and all that then changes the hearts of the demons. And they take up devotional service, you know, which is a disturbance to his father. So we see in all these examples that someone born in a low position, then they are able to take up devotional service. And because of by association devotees, and that devotional service destroys all sin. And so then they move forward. So it's not a matter of, you know, mundane qualification. Like sometimes it's thought that, okay, you did all that before you joined. You can do any manner of nonsense and that can be purified by the chanting. But if taking up devotional service, you do anything wrong, that you're eternally damned. You know, the holy name has no power over that. So these kind of misunderstandings, because these are attachment to karma and jnana, that we'll think like that. We'll project our own attachments onto the process of bhakti when bhakti is independent of our attachments. It's independent of our, you know, whether we believe it or not, that it works. Right? It means the karmi, he doesn't believe in devotional service. But meeting the devotees get him to chant, he chants, you know, he smiles, he walks off, you know. And that, but he's been changed. He's now been put on the path of Jnana Sukriti, you know, on his march back to Godhead. Up to this point, he may have just been a gross materialist, and that's all he's been for since, you know, time immemorial. But now he's on the path. And so that's bhakti. That's the point. Bhakti doesn't care. So it doesn't care on, you know, what our attachments are, what our view, what our perspective is, what we think it is or should be. Bhakti is what it is. You know, bhakti is Krishna's, you know, dear internal potency. All right? Srila Prabhupada. A person is born in a Brahmin family or in a family of dog eaters due to his past activities. If a person is born in a family of dog eaters, it means that his past activities were all sinful, right? So not just part sinful, all sinful. Basically, it just means it's predominantly. That's the consciousness. That's the effort. maybe by accident they do something pious, you know, they're nice to the mother, you know, they have a camaraderie or a loyalty to the family or their friends, you know, like that. But what they do is just, they're just sinful, right? But if even such a person takes to the path of devotional service and begins to chant the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, he is at once fit to perform the ritualistic ceremonies. This means that his sinful reactions have immediately become neutralized, right? So that's the point, is they become neutralized. When you take up devotional service with faith, right, because the point being that was made before, the person of pure and alloyed devotion, means it's faith, right? So that's a maturity of faith. So Prabhupada says prema means mature faith. So just taking up that first step of faith, it's already now working, because we have to remember is that removing the sins is the easy part. Us becoming committed to developing love for Krishna, that's the more difficult part, right? But because it's bhakti, it's easily performed, right? We take it, the material world is a big like this and the spiritual is like this. It's the other way around. It's like the sinful reactions are in connection with the gross and subtle body, which the soul is not. You know, it's just like I have this, and you know, it's like this. What does it take to get rid of it? Right? You just toss it. It's done. It has no meaning. It's dead matter. It's not. So we take it that this is the real thing. No, it's not. It's devotional service is the real thing, right? And because of devotional service, like let us say in a mirror, you have a big mirror like that. Let's say like at the, I remember seeing at the Marble Palace in Calcutta, the Moloch Mansion. Then I think it's maybe like a party room or a ballroom kind of thing where it's, you know, for entertaining, you know, big programs and guests, you know, very high ceilings. And one end of the room, the whole wall, floor to ceiling, the whole thing. And it's, you know, a big room. It's mirror, you know, all done up, you know, nicely with nicer, you know, arrangements, but it's all mirror. And so let's say we have some of the children of the house in the room, right? And so you can see what's going on in the mirror. Now, let us say that one of the siblings is harassing the other sibling, right? Let's say they have, you know, a pillow or something, and they're hitting the other sibling with this pillow, right? And so the sibling that has the pillow is laughing and having great fun, and the sibling being hit by the pillow is, you know, very sorry and saying, you know, making all kinds of noise. Now, we can see is, now there's the reality of what's there, and there's a reality and the reflection in the mirror. So in the mirror, what's going on is just sinful things. Nonsense, you know, this sibling is unnecessarily, you know, applying, you know, oppressive force, you know, through this, you know, very high grade, super soft pillow, you know, onto their sibling and giving them distress and try, you know, so, you know, the whole activity, whatever you see is all nonsense. Okay. Now, what does it take to change what's going on in the mirror? To stop hitting them with the pillow. That's it. And it's done. As soon as the child stops hitting with the pillow, in the mirror, it's done. There is no pillow hitting. It's gone. It's over. It doesn't have any influence or meaning to what was there. You know, the bit of, you know, glass and silver that's there that's reflecting all this doesn't, you know, there's nothing to be done. It's over. So that's the point. As soon as you take up devotional service, the karma's gone. Now, because we have identification and attachment to the external body and gross and subtle bodies by just, you know, habit from doing that for so long, because of our, you know, turning our attention away from Krishna, then by habit, we may, you know, do certain things and have certain interests or perspectives that are not actually useful in devotional service. And so, therefore, how do you purify? It's just like in karma, you have something to purify. It means, let's say I am a karmi and I pick up something dirty, right? How do I clean my hands, purify my hands? I go to the sink, I make them wet, take some soap, wash them, rinse it nicely, and dry my hands. Haribol. Now, let us say the devotee somehow or another also touches that same thing. Right? How do you purify yourself? Go to the sink, rinse, wet your hands, put some soap, wash them, rinse nicely, dry your hand, you're done. Right? It's the same thing. In other words, since bhakti is the abhideya, means the mess of the purifications are also coming from that abhideya. So therefore, bhakti will have, because it includes all the, you know, the proper elements from karma and jnana that are useful for the soul to engage in service to Krishna. So all those techniques are still there. That's where their origin. So therefore, if you have someone who has an attachment in karma, then the process of bhakti knows how to correct that. So Krishna arranges that whatever it would be is there. But as Krishna Prabhupada points out, it's reduced, right? Instead of being, you know, something very drastic happening, something minor happens. Right, that's the whole point, is that it should have been hundreds of times worse, but it's very minor, you know, like that. You know, instead of having a car run you over, then someone steps on your foot. You know, it causes some pain, you know, some notice, but you're purified. So what would have taken a karmi getting hit by a Mack truck, you got somebody just stepped on your foot. So that's the point, is, and then we're going to say that, oh, bhakti can't purify this if someone does. No, that's the whole point, is that bhakti is independent. We have to have that faith. Until you have that faith, that is dridha shraddha. As long as you think, oh, bhakti can't do this, some other method of prayaschitta that has to be used, then you know, there's elements of karma, jnana that are important for bhakti, and unless we have those, the movement won't develop or people won't develop. And no, that's kamal shraddha. That's weak faith. So, you know, how you say, one may be steady in one's, you know, basic sadhana, you know, like the temple program or chanting your japa and things like that, taking prasad. And, you know, so the direct activities, you're steady, and then that's very good. That's the glory. But outside of that, in the secondary, then we see there's a great weakness, because you think that secondary, you know, religious acts actually are on par with, or even greater than, or the cause of bhakti. So in that area, then one has kamo shraddha. So one has to see is that, yes, it's very important that we understand is that all these devotees from all over the world and all that, by karma, they wouldn't be able to do what they're doing. It's by the power of bhakti that they're purified and able to act in these positions. So that's the wonderfulness of the holy name, the devotional service, and the association with the devotees. Right? So Srila Jiva Goswami. This verse, starting with Dur Jatir Eva, explains how the previous verse illustrates removal of prarabdha karma, the cause of being disqualified for sacrifice. Sarvana yogyatvepi karanam is a low birth, dur jati, only in the sense that it produced the sinful nature, which is not favorable for being qualified for sacrifices, right? So this is a very important point, is that the sinful nature that is there, and that's what's not useful for sacrifice. In other words, sacrifice has to be done with pious or pure nature, because it's something that's being offered to Krishna. And so therefore, just like cooking, the point is, it's not that, oh, the person who's sinful can't cook. You know, I mean, probably if you check, most Michelin stars in the world are being held by people who are most likely sinful. And so, therefore, then it's That's the disqualification is their sinful mentality. And because of that, they do sinful activities. So it's the sinful mentality that is the problem. So therefore, in devotional service, you give up the sinful mentality, then that's the point. So that's why then the Bhajana Kriya, the association of devotees, that then purifies the heart until we get to the point where we're studying devotional service. So that's the point. That's the difference between the qualification and not. So the Brahmin has the natural tendency like that. So they have the natural qualification, inherent qualification. While the sinful birth, you know, person with sinful birth, they generally don't have the inclination for that. That's the main point. Low birth or Durjati is not the sole cause of his disqualification for sacrifice, right? Because that's what's taken present, because they take it, I'm born in a Brahmin family, I'm a Brahmin. So therefore, you're born in a low birth, you're low caste. But the point is, it's how are you behaving? So if the Brahmin, if the person born in a Brahmin family is acting improperly, that's a Dvija Bandhu. They're not qualified for sacrifice because the mentality is wrong. But the person born in a low-grade family, they take up devotional service. That mentality changes. They're qualified. So it's not just birth. Birth is generally an indication of something. You know, it's just like, let's say we go into the broom closet, right? Where the bucket, the broom, the rag, you know, the brush for scrubbing, this and that. So what's going to be in there? It's going to be, you know, cleaning items, but they themselves who wouldn't consider overly clean. You use them to clean, but touching them, you would want to wash your hands, right? So, but it doesn't mean that while someone was in there, they didn't drop one of their rings or something or their wallet. So generally speaking, if you were looking for that in the house, you wouldn't look in that closet because you think this is valuable. It should be in a valuable place. But it may be that somehow or another distracted, they dropped it. So it's there. But the point is you go by the qualification. The wallet, you know, has the money in it and everything. So therefore, then, you know, it's still a value. So you can't say that, oh, no, but it was in the broom closet, so now it's all useless. No, that doesn't matter. It still has the point, right? For even those born in Brahma families without bad qualities are not qualified, right? So it means, so it's not just the aspect of his birth. That just is an indication that he has bad qualities. But the Brahmin born, the person born in the Brahmin family, he doesn't have bad qualities, but he's still not qualified just by birth to do the sacrifice, right? Even those of high birth must attain additional qualification. In other words, they have the potential, then they have to get the proper qualification. So the other one by birth tends to not have the potential. Therefore, there would be no inclination or advantage to getting the qualification because they wouldn't use it properly anyway, right? They must undergo the second birth, which gives them a special purity, which makes them qualified for performing sacrifice. So if it says, like here, Prabhupada, thus means that his sinful reactions, he is at once fit to perform the ritualistic ceremony. Right. This means that his sinful reactions have immediately been neutralized. So what does that mean? It means that if he can perform ritualistic ceremonies, you have to have the additional qualification of undergoing second birth, which gives him the special purity. That means that was by devotional service. And how are they taking? Because all their karma is all destroyed. So it doesn't mean it's not there. That's like if I say sweet rice as a preparation. I didn't mention milk. Does that mean there's no milk? You know, or I didn't mention it had cardamom or saffron, you know, or other whatever else it might be, because I didn't mention it, that means it doesn't have it. So it means you know what it is. To do the sacrifice, you have to have training. To have the training, you have to have second initiation. To have second initiation, you must have been stable in devotional service and understanding the principles of devotional service and the knowledge. then that is because you had an association of the devotees and all that. And that is because by devotees' mercy, you got the faith and you took up the process. So therefore, the process of bhakti has, by coming in contact with bhakti through the devotees, he's able to do sacrifice. Right? So therefore, we should understand what it means. Like if I say cook lunch, that doesn't mean that, the person already knows how to cook. Person already knows. So these things are already included. That means there's something there. You know, if I say cook lunch, that means you do it now. If I say, oh, you're going to have to cook lunch tomorrow, so that means, okay, then all the arrangements that need to be made, I have to check. But if I just say you cook lunch, that means whatever's there, that's what's going to be cooked. Right? So you have to understand is that depending upon what's being said, it already includes whatever is necessary to be able to do it. Like you say, yes, he took second initiation. That means he had first. And how did he take first? Because of this, qualification in the performance of bhakti. So all these things have to be, those are all there. So that means bhakti, by the performance, it includes all that. In fact, by bhakti, why second initiate? He'll go on to, develop a taste for Krishna, chanting the holy name, attachment to Krishna, bhava, and then prema. All that will come. Bhakti can take you through all the way. Right? And then it's not that when bhakti comes there, like karma gyan, it's finished. No, bhakti then continues as the abhideya, but now it's the abhideya for pure unalloyed devotional service. Well, before it was the vehicle for bhava or for ashakti or for ruchi or for nishta or for, any of these other stages. But now it's the vehicle for expressing pure unalloyed devotion. So bhakti always remains as the abhideya. Not that it's just something here that we, is here, but no, it remains. So that's the rahasya, is that it is the process that by through it you get bhakti, but at the same time is it continues. So that means technically by performing bhakti, prema is a side benefit. It's a natural benefit, an inherent benefit, but it's not the main thing. The main thing is to be engaged in pure devotional service. You say, main thing is to develop love for Krishna, yes, but what are you going to do? How are you going to, it means you have love for Krishna, you're going to express it. How are you going to express it? Through bhakti. Right? So that's why we saw before, then in the discussion, at different points, it's pointing out that the goal that you're trying to get is prema. Bhakti is a process to get there. But so you can't say as bhakti is prema, right? But at the same time is the hidden point is bhakti continues even though you get prema. But now it's then functioning at higher and higher levels. And then when you go on beyond that to, sneha and all these other levels, that bhakti is going to be the expression of that. So that's the amazing thing. It's, I'm just performing bhakti. No, you want to get prema. You have to see as, pleasing Krishna is your goal. But even you're pleasing Krishna, or once you continue, because it has to be pointed out, because in karma and jnana, once you get the results, you stop the process. Right? And that's why bhakti disappears from karma and jnana, because the process stopped. Well, in the, And so then for the pure devotee, then it continues. It is the abhideya. So it's not an abhideya. It is the. It's the only, the one and only. So even the reflection here is a reflection of bhakti, but it's just applied through the medium of karma and jnana. So you call it by that because that's what it looks like. Right? Does that make sense? Like in my hand, I want to put some force, right? If I'm using this downward force with a knife on a potato, I'm cutting vegetables, right? If I'm using this, I have a hammer in my hand and there's a nail and I'm hitting the hammer, same movement, then, it's called, I'm doing carpentry. Or if I'm taking, a reef of papers, that have some, whatever it is, documentation on it, and I'm throwing it down on the table in front of somebody, to establish my point that this is correct, then, you'll say that you're working in the, whatever it is, diplomatic or something like that. The movement's the same. So the power is the same. So bhakti, the power just becomes reduced, just as Krishna, to maintain this whole mahatattva, only takes a billionth, drop of it, just a billionth portion of his potency. And that's just to give some idea that it doesn't take anything to do. And that's the whole mahatattva, not even just one universe. That means, or one place. It takes nothing for Krishna. So the same way is the amount of pressure that the, or potency that the bhakti has to apply to make karma and jnana work through the whole mahatattva is hardly anything. But when you're working with pure bhakti that you've gained in the parampara, like that, then that now has the potency like the spiritual world. That's why it's so much greater, because the other one, it's hardly anything is taken like that. So we have to understand is that the view is actually from the point of the spiritual world. It's a descending thing. So bhakti is the thing. The other things aren't. So even you say, well, you have to have a job and make money, but if you don't have devotion to the process of making money, you won't make money. You don't have process, devotion, or whatever it is you're doing, it's not going to be successful. That's just how it works. Right? Through bhakti, you get your results. Right? And then you're going to get your results, whatever it is that you, deserve from your previous karma, from the performance of your action. Now, continuing then. Okay. Then, what are we doing in time? Okay. Now, it is a fact that the sinful person dissolves the prarabdha karmas, producing bad birth and qualities, which are unfavorable for conducting sacrifice. But since he does not have the second birth because of lack of virtuous behavior previously. Let's see. And let's switch the sentence. If he actually wants to perform sacrifices, he must take another birth in the future and then undergo the second birth rites, which will bestow particular purity, which will destroy the lack of qualification inherent even in sons of Brahmins. In that sense, commenting on the words Stavanaya Kalpate in the verse 1121, Sridhar Swami says, quote, being immediately qualified for sacrifice means that he is given the respect due to a qualified person, end quote. So then here in this footnote, the word shishtachara is used here. It means proper conduct. Since bhakti has transformed the dog eater, he should have good qualities. Therefore, the statement concerning lack of proper conduct can only refer to his younger years. One could argue that just as bhakti destroys immediately prarabdha karmas, it also bestows all good qualities. Therefore, the person would gain proper conduct, could take second birth and perform sacrifice in this life. However, the reasoning here seems to be that as a young child, one should take the Vedic initiation and begin learning the Vedas. When the dog eater was a child, he lacked the proper qualification for second birth since he had not started practicing bhakti. He lacked shishtachara. The dog eater who began practicing bhakti and then became purified of karma has already passed that age and therefore needs to wait for another birth to attain his second birth while young and qualified. The Vivriti on the Bhagavatam verse, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, says that the statement, quote, lacking proper behavior, end quote, is only in relation to the low-born who does not receive Vaishnav Diksha. The low-born receive Vaishnav Diksha, then he surpasses the second birth, right? So, who does not receive Vaishnav Diksha. So, in other words, the Jiva Goswami has made the point, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made the point, that and Srila Prabhupada has made the point. So, there's even though it may seem they're taking different angles, but he says, Jiva Goswami says he has to take birth again, and the next birth he can do, because by performing the bhakti, then next birth he'll, you know, take birth in the family of devotees, or depending on how far he gets, you know, in the family of religious persons or qualified persons or Brahmins or like this. So then he can get the second birth, and then he can perform, because that's someone on the Vedic platform. That's how it worked. Right. So on the Vedic platform, even though he takes up devotional service and all that, then he'll still consider himself low born and all that, though he will be respected, as Sridhar Swami points out, that he must be given the respect due to a qualified person. So all the others will respect, like you even see in the, So therefore, then that aspect will be there. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out that Vaishnava Diksha is beyond, Upanayanam, or the Vedic Diksha, right? So it technically is Twija, right? It's beyond, surpasses second birth, because it has a greater potency. It changes the body. So even though he's born in the Chandala family, yes, as a Chandala and with that body, he can't perform the sacrifices. But by qualifying himself by the association of devotees, then and his devotional practices, then he comes to the point where he receives Vaishnava Diksha, that changes the body. And so now he's been born into Vaishnavism. So the first birth didn't count, because this is technically the third birth. And because of the third birth, now he's qualified, because now he has a proper body. Now he gets the Upanayanam. So actually, it's only because of his third birth as you know, the Vaishnava Diksha, the Pancharatrik, that he's getting the Vedic, right? That's the point that's there. So it's not that, oh, we'll go up through this, oh, we get the Karmis, and then they'll get Upanayanam, then the, because there were some simple presidents when they found out that there was such a thing. Oh, yeah, so then we could give all the new bhaktas Upanayanam, then they can do all the puja because we don't have any pujaris, right? Because all the second initiated devotees left, right? So no, that's not how it works. They can't get Upanayanam. It means even though it's a lower point until they get the higher, it's only by that devotionally then it works. So one has to see what's going on here. Is that so? Therefore, if that Chandala takes Vaishnava Diksha, then getting the Upanayanam, he can then perform sacrifices. You know, that's the point. Now one says, well, what if he takes birth, in the Chandala family, and then at an earlier age, because he's saying here young age. And so it indicates that he's not young enough now, because for the Brahmin, then if he doesn't take Upanayanam by the age of 16, not during the 16th year, by 16, in other words, in his 15th year, latest, then he's unqualified. He can't get it the rest of his life. That's the point. So therefore, if he at a younger age, let's say like Satyakama Jabala, right? Disciple of Gotama. So he came, I think he was 8 years old. He came to Gotama Rishi one day and said, would you accept me as your disciple? So Gotama Rishi sees the mood of the boy and everything like that. He says, yeah, of course, but I need to know, do you know what your Gotra is and all that? You know, and so he said, no, but I can go ask my mother. So he said, okay. So then he left to go ask his mother, right? And then his mother, you know, who, you know, pointed out that, in her line of work, that she doesn't really know which man who came on what evening was his father. You know, so she can't tell him what his Gotra is. So then he went back to Gotama and came up to her and very frankly said, my dear sir, I asked my mother, but, you know, she said that so many men come see her every night and, you know, over so long period that she has no idea who my father is. So she doesn't know. She can't say what my Gotra is. And so then Gotama said, he'll accept him as his disciple. And his reasoning being that only a Brahmin could be that straightforward, because, a Shudra wouldn't have interest, and a Kshatriya and a Vaishya who could get you know, Upanayanam, they would be worried that, oh, this will ruin my chances. You know, so they'll try to keep it a secret or, you know, do something else. But a Brahmin would be straightforward. He doesn't, he's not worried about the loss. And so then he accepted him. And so therefore he's known as one of the great sages, and that is always mentioned, you know, in the Vedic literatures and Mahabharata and all that. So that's the point. Is that he comes young enough and has that, you know, Brahminical nature like that. Why not? So that just means he's born in a low family because of some offense or something else like that. Like you see Narad Muni, you know, he's Narad Muni. Then he, due to pride, then, you know, comes comments that then Lord Brahma arranges that then he appears, you know, as a, I think it's a Gandharva. And so then, you know, he's with all the Gandharvas and all this and, you know, misbehaving and all that. So then the demigods curse him, you know, because they were doing Harinam and he was, you know, just singing all kinds of crazy songs and doing, you know, just, in other words, he was just doing things instead of taking the mood of the Harinam. He was doing things to impress all the girls around him, right? And so then the demigods cursed him because, you know, you're a demigod and you're here and you're doing these things, you know, behaving badly, because demigods are supposed to be in the mode of goodness, that you're behaving badly, you know, here, you know, in passion and ignorance, that therefore you take birth in a low birth. And then he took birth in the family of a maidservant, right? In this family. And so then, I mean, yeah. And so you know, that was because of offense in that. But you see is that by the association of those Bhaktivedantas who came to there with, you know, with Narad Muni, you know, where he was the son of the maidservant, he assisted them, you know, served them and took the remnants of their meal. Then he became, you know, a great sage and then wandered the earth and, you know, absorbed in the transcendental consciousness and got the Lord's mercy by the Lord appearing to him, in, you know, directly in the form of his sound. And so then, you know, then that was at the dead end of the universe, right? So then, yeah, unless it was at the end of, an end of, you know, the Manu or something, or whatever it is. It was a time for a destruction, point of destruction. So then the destruction is there, so everything's destroyed. And then, you know, he comes back next birth as Narad Muni, the son of Lord Brahma. So all he did was just, you know, Brahma arranged that he got, you know, went through, you know, though a lesson was there, you know, and that's there for us because he doesn't need, but it's there for our benefit so that we know properly how to behave or not. Right? So we see is that the aspect of is that early enough you come and you show the qualifications, then that you could take up that, you know, you have that nature, then yes, you could go through in this life. But generally speaking, from the Vedic, you're going to find it's going to be extremely rare that you ever see such a person. So we see Narad Muni, you know, as a son of a maidservant was like that. Satyagama, Jamala is like that. But for the Pancharatrik, that then anybody born there, if they can take up properly, that they qualify for, you know, second initiation in the Pancharatrik system, then automatically the Dwijanist, you know, comes along with it. Is that all right? But in any case, whatever the position, they're to be given the respect due to a qualified person. Right? What should be understood from the words immediate destruction of sinful reactions in this life, which have caused bad birth, end quote, is that there is destruction of the sufferings to be experienced in this life, caused by the bad birth through the action of bhakti, footnote 5. Sinful acts cause reactions in the form of unfavorable circumstances such as low birth, acquisition of bad qualities, and suffering. These are all removed by bhakti. In some cases, circumstances cannot be removed immediately. Such a case is one's birth, right? You can't remove the low birth like that, because then you won't have a body to function in. So therefore, then that's going to remain. The birth will remain, the body you had remains, right? By performing bhakti, one cannot change one's birth from particular parents within this lifetime. Some circumstances, such as sickness, can be destroyed. As well as that, the bad qualities and the suffering caused by bad qualities or circumstances are destroyed by bhakti. The dog eater who becomes a devotee cannot remove his birth and certain incidents ensuing from it, such as not being educated in the Vedas, right? So that means, let's say he joins later, he won't be able to learn and study the Veda in the way of memorizing for doing the sacrifices, right? Because we're studying this in context of performance of Vedic sacrifice, right? So he won't have been able to learn those Vedic mantras, and so he won't have the qualifications, so he can't change that like that, you know, if he had joined earlier, but that means the sin is less. Right? But the point is he has the devotional qualifications and the purity to perform, you know, on the Vedic platform. You know, I mean, to perform. Though he's not going to, because certain aspects haven't been adjusted. Right? But he can remove the bad qualities and the suffering. The changing of birth would have to wait until next lifetime. Right? So that's just, that's how. So we have to see exactly what it means, that it means what it means, but you have to also not take it, oh, but that only means this, and reduce the glory of bhakti, or take it the other way, and oh, therefore, you know, just, you know, from the moment he chanted, now, you know, the new bhakti, he just came yesterday, now he can do the sacrifice. You know, so one has to appreciate that, you know, it's very exact in its science how it works. And bhakti has that power, because anything that he becomes qualified, as Sridhara Swami says, being immediately qualified for sacrifice means he has given the respect due to qualified person. Okay. Thus, this is the suitable example to illustrate the topic. Quote, destruction of all prarabdha karmas, end quote. Right. So you say that's what it means, but you have to see is that, you know, in certain things, you know, but it's, those don't matter, because that doesn't need to change, right? So that's why the modern thing, where it simply goes on the birth, and that's not actually varnashram. Varnashram is my qualification. Right? In the similar matter, it is said, quote, there is no sin at all in the devotees of Vasudeva. Birth, death, old age, and disease do not give fear to them. Vishnu Sahasranama Stotra. Right? So it does not give fear to them, because fear is caused by forgetfulness of Krishna and identifying with the body. But because they don't forget Krishna and they don't identify with the gross and subtle body, there's no fear. So around them, circumstances, you know, will be, as it may be removed, that anything, elements of any loneliness, any elements of envy, may not be there, or they may be there. But the point is because they're surrendered to Krishna, it doesn't affect them. Doesn't affect means they're unaffected. It doesn't mean that circumstantially things don't happen. But so that's the point. Circumstantially may or may not. You can't say, but they're unaffected. Okay, Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura. Yogyatva, or qualification, means the essential nature which qualifies a person for performing sacrifice. One should not say, quote, if that low-born person really has qualification for sacrifice, why does he not then perform sacrifices? End quote. This implies that he actually is not qualified. Right? So he says, why doesn't he perform if he's actually qualified? Right? Because they're not catching the bhakti aspect. It just says, oh, but he's a low birth. Why doesn't he do now? But the point is, it's through bhakti that he can do, right? He does not do sacrifices, not because he's not qualified, but because he does not have faith in such actions, since he's endowed with pure bhakti. So that's taking another aspect. He is not doing because he doesn't have faith that the performance of Vedic sacrifices is important to him. right? It's not useful for him in bhakti and all that. So you see, when we're performing Vedic sacrifices, we're performing them, again, through Pancharatra. So only those elements that are there within the Pancharatra, system, since Pancharatra comes from both, you know, it's taken from both the Vedic, direct Vedic and the Tantric, that combination. So then that combination, those elements from the Vedic that are there, someone initiated the Pancharatra can use. And that. So it's not that we're doing straight Vedic yajna. So he doesn't care, right? He can do, but that's not important for him in his devotion. And other household devotees born in high families perform these actions only to teach the common people not to abandon duties, though they too have no faith that these actions have any value, right? So, in other words, doing these things are for performance of duties, right? So they're doing as Brahmins, doing whatever they're doing, but it's not that they feel like the Brahmin may be doing his samskaras and all that for the community, but it's not that he's thinking that that itself is the important element. He's thinking is that, you know, he's performing his duties as a Brahmin. He has that nature, so he should do Brahminical duties to please Krishna. But, you know, but it's not that the item that's being, means the samskar being done is necessarily an actual benefit for the person. Because as a karma, it'll purify them, yes, and bring them closer. That's the whole idea, that is bringing you up to a stage of like Upanayanam, or at least raising the consciousness so that one can raise person slow. But for his life, it's not important, right? For the devotees, then they're doing, because these are purifying elements that are useful in Krishna consciousness, because they're engaged in Krishna consciousness. For the karmi, they're doing them simply because of the piety, right? So he's not interested in piety. Okay. Thus, the Gita says, by prescribed actions as well as hearing, Janaka and others attained realization of Atma. Thus, just with the consideration of setting examples for others, you should perform work. Bhagavad Gita 3:20. Yeah, so then they're performing their prescribed actions of life, right? So as the king, he should be hearing from the Brahmins and the sages. So doing that, he realized Atma. Right? So that's the point. It's there. Yeah, we're good. Okay, so then we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.